was so bad.
Now, listen. Is it Milrow is so bad, or is Michigan... Why don't you drink out of one of the mugs instead of crinkling that thing?
Like, you've got the team. If you're not going to beat Michigan, you've at least got to... They're so loaded.
They had the most talent of the 12 going in. But now, it is obvious they are finally playing like they have it.
And Texas might have close to the same talent, but they don't have anywhere near that.
I don't think Texas has. Texas is a good team. The teams that are left are good. And Notre Dame, I thought in the past when they've been at this level, has been somewhat fraudulent. But Notre Dame's a pretty complete team.
Yeah.
But Ohio State just has the most ability in the uniforms. Yes.
I made this a mirror in the camera. It's not rolling yet, is it?
You look resplendent in 2025.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Should I put my chair? I grew. And now I'm just only 8 inches shorter than you.
The 2 weeks in Florida has done wonders. You look...
Done wonders.
Not a day over 40.
That is a compliment for me. Welcome back to the heart of the rivalry here at the Toledo Blade. Here is... Man, I am out of practice.
I know.
Welcome back to 2025, the heart of the rivalry. We are here at the Toledo Blade with Blade sports columnist David Briggs, fresh off his trip to the Rose Bowl, a victorious and unstoppable Ohio State team that he witnessed. I am your host, Phil Kaplan, photographer for the Blade and multimedia producer.
Hi, Phil.
And also listener to our listeners. And one of the suggestions for this runaway success of a show is that we introduce a little table of contents.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
Right,
so we're going to set up a little, what are we talking about on this show?
Kind of like PTI?
So number one, your trip to the Rose Bowl. Of course, that's where we're going to start. But we're going to revisit UT's 6-0 thriller. BG's, you know, they just couldn't get over the Red Wolves scruff. But they did have that fake punt, so we'll talk about that. That was pretty fun. And then the monsoon in Michigan. Some predictions, and then we'll get you out of here back to Dallas, where you're going to be living in an igloo. Is that correct?
That's correct. Big snowstorm coming. Excited.
When this airs, you will probably already be there. When are you going?
Going Wednesday afternoon.
Wednesday afternoon. So by the time this airs, you will be living in frigid Dallas, Texas.
That is true. And I see they're supposed to get up to a foot of snow in Dallas Thursday and Friday. And I see the responses on Twitter are both. There's one side of it's like, well, who cares? The game's indoors. Not realizing that the concern of the snow is the, you know, detouring resources away from the, you know, all the other
resources. Dalesians, is that correct? Dallasites? The Dalesians, they can't handle 1 inch of snow. Right. They're not going to be able to deal with this.
And then there's the other crowd who is like, oh man, snow football, this is going to be great. Not realizing the game's indoors.
Awesome. So, shades of Leon Lett.
But it should be fun. Yeah. Did you get any new clothes for the holiday?
I did. They were all like summery. So this is from the moth-ridden cedar chest part of my closet. What was the best gift you gave or received over your holidays?
Best gift I received? New suitcase.
A new suitcase?
Yeah, that was
hard edged?
No, flat. You got to jam it into those overhead containers. You got to have the soft, just because, I mean, it's always just...
A man who travels, you must loathe checking a bag. This must be a big deal. Now you're going to get everything in there.
Everything in there.
Ram it in there.
Everything in there. Only time you would... only time I ever check a bag is if you're traveling with golf clubs. And I will not be taking golf clubs on... Well, don't really take golf clubs on business trips. And certainly not to Dallas, but...
Well, somebody can lend you some there.
Yeah,
as a man of, you know, who plays in the middle of the paint at 6'8", what is flying commercial like for you?
I mean, it's terrible if you, I mean, even somebody who's of your diminutive stature, what are you, about 5? What are you, about 6? You're only 6 foot, right?
The only place in the world of which I am average is height, and even on most planes, it's not super great.
What are you,
for
about
me.
6 foot, 6'1"?
Yeah, that's correct.
6'3".
Yeah, 6'4".
No. I mean, even if you're 5'10", I mean, you're cramped into the seat, so you can imagine what it's like. I mean, you're just
I don't have to imagine what it's like to be 5'10".
No, you're six. Whatever, you're six. But yeah, you are pretzeled in there, and for me, it's kind of like just thrombosis waiting to happen if you're crammed in there, especially on a last year I booked to cover the Italian go over for the I went for the Blade Italy. To kind of preview the Italian Bowl, get a lay of the land, go to Florence, which is not a bad gig if you can get it. But it was at the last minute, so I couldn't really – I couldn't get an exit row. I had to cram into like a middle seat on a six-hour flight. Oh. So that was less than a deal. A trip made it worth it. But anyway, always get the exit row. So and if you can get not only the exit row, but the seat – there's always a seat on the plane where it's there's not a seat in front of you. So – that's the ultimate. It's like flying first class for Coach Ray. So that's and if you're not over 6 foot, if I see you stealing one of the exit rows, I'm coming for you.
Let's just do a quick summary for those that aren't familiar. The Italian Bowl was played here in the Glass Bowl and it over there.
And it's coming back.
And it is coming back in the IAFL. Is that correct? The Italian American Football League?
I think that's
right. Is that right? They started because Dan Marino was popular and led his team to a Super Bowl in 1984 and is Italian. And that sparked an interest in Italian football. And when that team visited our resplendent, that's three times now, Glass City and played, talk about, I've never seen more 5'10 athletes. Everybody on the team was 5'10. I was like, I could go to Italy and restart my football career.
How about the 40-year-old guy who had just the dented 20-year-old helmet? It had death written on it. And he was just taking drags of just smoking on the sideline. It was awesome. It was his final game. Not to get on a detour here, but it was so cool to see how much that meant to them. I mean, first of all, Toledo supported the hell out of the game. But just the despair on the side of the losing team and just the complete joy on the side of the winning team. I mean, you can say what you will about the level of football, but this means everything to them. I mean, these guys are just everyday Joes like us with normal jobs. They're firefighters, they're nurses, they're everything, construction workers, and they play for free. And my favorite quote was one of the guys when they won the conference championship game to go to the Italian Bowl in Toledo, he said, instead of, you know, we're going to Disney World, he said, Mom, I'm going to Toledo. And he was crying.
Tell us about our man of the hour. What'd you think of Ryan Day? How is he responding to his team's responding?
Yeah, it's been a pretty cool story to follow. I don't think anyone, there's kind of been a narrative that fans owe Ryan Day an apology now. I don't think, unless you're listening to this from the clink and you were threatening Ryan Day and his family, you do not, nobody owes Ryan Day anything, just like Ryan Day doesn't owe anybody else anything. It's sports, it's a game.
Yeah.
But credit Ryan Day for, I mean, at the absolute crossroads and the challenge of his career, you know, that Michigan debacle could have broken the team. And instead, you know, Ryan Day ran toward that challenge. The team embraced it, and they are absolutely
flamethrower.
They are absolutely on fire. They're loose. They're confident. They're fast. They're playing violin. And it's just like, okay, this is what we expected all year. Ryan Day said, this is a team that's going to leave no doubt. Well, they're leaving no doubt. And this is the most talented roster in the country, playing like the most talented roster in the country, and then some. So it's been cool to watch, and especially all the justified criticism everybody around Ohio State got, especially the coaching staff. It's been cool to see them come out of the other side of this and kind of set off on this incredible road to redemption.
Who was the football player's player of the game?
What's the criterion there, Phil?
You know, not the most valuable player, not the Jeremiah Smith. Yeah, not the glitzy show stuff, and not that stuff doesn't matter. Of course it does, but the, you know, the maybe overlooked player of the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, Luke Montgomery from Finley again played well.
That's what I wanted you to say.
Well, he's the MVP of local. Maybe didn't quite play as dominantly as he did against Tennessee, but again, playing in the rotation.
MVFP, most valuable Finley player.
Right. Most grad, most grad, Most valuable Northwest Ohio player. I think we can
wipe MVNWP.
He was one of the 10 most valuable Ohio players. I don't know.
OOT10VPNWOP. Oh, it's prestigious.
Yeah. This is not, it's not being overlooked. I mean, it's hard to say because like picking the most dominant Ohio State player is like picking like which pebble inflicted the most.
Thought, who stood out to you,
inflicted
Dave?
Inflicted the most damage in a landslide. Pick like your it was pebble. Everybody was. I mean, this didn't go unnoticed because every bit of Ohio State's dominance was certainly noticed. But just how about the defensive line? I mean, and Cody Simon at linebacker.
Wrecking
I mean,
crew.
The pressure was just first game against Oregon, 32-31 loss in Eugene, zero sacks. Didn't really get to Dylan Gabriel, Oregon star quarterback at all. This time around, 8 sacks and just kind of setting up residence in the backfield. Just an absolute – Ohio State certainly brought Jim Knowles, D.C., called a more aggressive game. But this was also just a defensive line with just a wrecking machine, a lot to prove, a lot to keep showing. And they're just absolutely playing at a level unmatched anywhere else in the country. So it's hard to – secondary's elite, linebackers are elite. Defensive line, best in the country. It's all coming together, Pepper.
Dylan Gabriel's first day of vacation. Do you think he was?
I know.
I mean, he was never. There was not a moment he was comfortable.
I know. Except the middle 8 minutes. Ryan Day said they have to improve the middle 8 minutes of these games.
Great feeling as a coach when all you have to work on is the middle 8.
Yeah. After we're ahead 41-0, we just gotta you guys just gotta keep the foot on the gas. This is embarrassing.
When it was 34-0 in the middle of the second quarter, I was stunned. Like I said, I thought Ohio State was going to beat them, but that was – I've never seen anything like that.
I know. 34-15 early in the second half, Ohio State goes 3-and-out. Were you a little concerned then?
Yes, because even as an Ohio State fan, I am also aware – and I am aware of the football weathers, you know, and I immediately think of, are we going to get Frank Reich'd? Is this going to be the time? So you got to keep your foot on the gas.
No, absolutely.
You know, and the game ends 41-21. So from 34-15, you know, you really only get 7-6. So the game is effectively over within the first hour of real time.
Yeah. No, it's – I mean, and we talk about the defense. Offense was every bit as electric, if not more so. I mean, again, credit to Ryan Day, offensive coordinator Chip Kelly, offensive line coach Justin Fry. Everybody who was kind of thrown into the narrative wood chipper has kind of come back and delivered the kind of the responses of their career. Obviously, the players have played well, but also calling a super aggressive game. The Michigan game plan kind of showed them exactly what not to do, trying to win a strongman contest against a good defensive line, just running it up the middle. You know, the typical football cliches, you got to run to set up the pass. I mean, Ohio State realizes, I mean, Ryan Day and Chip Kelly had the humility to realize, look, this is not who we are. We're going to pass. And
to
then,
set up the run.
To set up the run.
Beautiful.
And it's all coming up roses.
Let's move on from Ohio State to that team up north, the Michigan Wolverines, who... their defense is tough. A monsoon helped them play in elements that I don't think Alabama wanted to play in, but they end up smoking Alabama. You beat Ohio State, you beat Alabama twice in a year. Nobody's more thrilled about 8-5 than the Michigan Wolverines.
Absolutely. What a way to bookend the year. Beat Alabama in the playoffs on January 1st on your way to a national title. End it with a beatdown of an Alabama team that all the SEC shills were saying should be in the playoff. And guess what? Alabama played all their guys or all their starters, and people are saying, oh, wow, what a great look for their culture. That just shows it's, you know, in such a great place. Michigan, everybody's opting out. It's like, well, guess what? We saw who has the better culture, and that was clearly Michigan. Even playing almost all backups, or at least without any of their top players, they still just bully Alabama. Yeah, I mean, how about, and like you said, I mean, just the,
I have no hidden patch of crystals, but also I had that.
Yeah.
I thought that Michigan was tough. I thought that Ohio State played into Michigan's defense, but Michigan's defense is tough.
Absolutely.
They've got some first rounders.
Right. I still think it's probably a little bit more of Alabama and Jalen Milroe just being completely out of sorts. My God, he was bad.
Well, I like that. But yeah. I like when Alabama is just also bad.
But give Michigan all the credit. And again, just God, it's hard to imagine the narrative around Michigan coach Sharon Moore shifting more in 1 month. November 30th, you're 6-5 going in to get blown out by Ohio State. Finish 6-6. There was talk if Michigan had gotten blown out in that game and finished 6-6, they were going to go to the Motor City Bowl and they would have played Toledo. So that would have been fascinating.
That would have made our coverage easier.
Instead, and I think Toledo could have beaten Michigan if they had gone 6-6 and completely checked out. But that's alternate fantasy land universe. But yeah, you beat Ohio State. You beat Alabama team that thought they should have been in the playoffs. And you get the number one recruit in the country. So people are pretty excited, rightfully so.
You mentioned Toledo. So let's jump into their super fun bowl awesome game. Six overtimes. And in shades of Ohio State's Fiesta Bowl victory, where Miami was given the crown and the confetti went off, Toledo won that game three separate times before it finally counted. What'd you think of that?
That was awesome. And it already feels like it's been a month ago. But yeah.
It does feel like it's been forever.
I mean, there's a lot of cynicism and we're all jaded around the bowl games. You know, do there really need to be 40 bowl games and rewarding teams that went 6-6, or in the case of Toledo and Pittsburgh, 7-5. But then
if you're watching TV with my retired parents in Florida, yes, I need those bowl games.
But then you watch the games and it does mean everything to these teams, or not everything, but a lot. I mean, and by the way, 2.6 million people watched that game on ESPN. I mean, that is
any NBA.
Yeah, for all the talk of the exposure Toledo gets from the weeknight action games, they didn't get a million viewers in all those games combined on ESPNU and ESPN2 and maybe a game sprinkled in there on ESPN. And guess what? Toledo's huge win, obviously the biggest win of the year, was at Mississippi State earlier this year. It was on a Saturday night, completely buried. It's on ESPNU, but that game gets 69,000 viewers. 69,000 viewers, completely lost in the shuffle of a million games on Saturday night. This game, it's the only show in town, and as the game went on, first overtime, second overtime, third overtime, you can see on social media that everybody in the college football nation is watching this game. I mean, the spotlight is on Toledo, and how much fun was that overtime? Pat Narduzzi, the Pittsburgh coach, is total dumbass. I mean, he made some of the dumbest decisions I've ever seen.
He walked off without shaking Candle's hand.
What a loser.
I believe Narduzzi is Italian for loser, to reference back to the IAFL. Yeah,
no, classless. And he probably realized, like, what an idiot I am. I cost my team the game. But what a performance by Toledo. Like you said, you had three different field stormings. that were called back by late penalties on Toledo, and all three times it kind of reminded me of, in a weird way, when 1997 Game 7 of the World Series, Cleveland Marlins, they wheeled the trophy into the Indians locker room prematurely. Obviously, the Marlins won. We know the rest of the story. But
why'd you have to bring that up? We were having a nice show.
On each of those field stormings, they had like a 10-person crew on the sideline, and they start racing onto the field with the stage. So the stage gets like a third of the way out on the field each time, and then they have to wheel it back, and everybody gets called back. And
it's like a Mel Brooks comedy. Right, all right, bring it out, boys.
Right. Then finally they win. But yeah, and how about the play calls by Jason Candle in overtime?
Gutsy.
Every 2-point conversion. Did you watch the Lions game the other night?
I did.
It's just like you see like the red zone struggles by the Vikings and making it look so hard, and then you see like Toledo making it look so easy.
You got to give some of that to the Lions defense.
For sure,
they played
for sure.
Lights out.
And Sam Darnold, give it up to him for not being able to throw the ball into the Detroit River, but
he did sail a few.
But yeah, how about those play calls? And Jason Candle admitted, I did not realize this was a thing. He said by the end of the game, they were drawing up plays on the whiteboard because, you know, you just ran out of 2-point plays. And, you know, a lot of teams just like will save like two or three of their best plays.
I love that.
Two or three of their best plays for those situations. And you think of it all the time in basketball. You're just kind of drawing up X's and O's on the fly. It's like, I think this will work against this defense. In football, you think everything is scripted. You have a million calls on your play sheet, and your calls are going to come from that. But they were adjusting. They saw what Pittsburgh was doing. And Jason Candle, by the way, using a Sharpie on a whiteboard because they didn't have any because you're not really drawing on the sideline. So he ruined a whiteboard. That should go in, like, the College Football Hall of Fame. Longest overtime game. The plays.
What a great piece of memorabilia that would be to have.
Yeah, he was using a red Sharpie. And
some Rocket alumni has got to be out there hunting for that.
But yeah, one of the turns in from kind of a nothing game going in to just what an awesome showcase for Toledo. One of the most memorable wins in school history. One of the most off the rails games in college football history. Longest bowl overtime game ever. Toledo plays the first overtime game in college football history at the 1995 Las Vegas Bowl. When they were introducing overtime on kind of a trial run. Gary Pinkel wins the Las Vegas Bowl.
Nevada? And
Yeah. In overtime. And if only they could have known kind of the monster Frankenstein they released on this world. And 29 years later, they play the craziest bowl overtime game in history. Toledo beats two Power Four teams in 1 year. Second time they've done that in school history. And guess what? That two Power Four wins for Toledo, that's more Power Four wins than five Power Four conference teams had, including Kentucky, which was their only Power Four win was over Ole Miss, which also thought they should be in the playoff. But the SEC being that's a story for another day.
But
as
he
well.
Digresses. Speaking of the funnest plays in college football, though our Bowling Green Falcons could not come out with a victory, one of the funnest plays in the bowl season highlight packages is the fake punt. Did you see that?
I did not. I was on the way home from Detroit.
It but
was,
you were able to review it.
I was, but you saw it live.
I did.
Did you watch back-to-back football with Toledo and then Bowling Green, all Northwest Ohio?
Yeah.
The day after Boxing Day?
Yeah. Okay. It was thrilling.
Speaking of boxing, there was a lot of fights in the Toledo-Pittsburgh game, so that was nice, too.
There was a lot of fights in that game.
How can Pittsburgh and Toledo have any chippiness? It was like the most chippy game I've ever seen. It's like these two teams.
Because neither of them wanted to be in Detroit.
Toledo did. I mean, Toledo didn't mind.
They I love Detroit. I don't mean to knock
Toledo
Detroit.
Toledo brought an awesome contingent.
They do have a statue that's a giant fist, though. So I think people like to go to Detroit.
I will apologize. I sent out a tweet before the game kind of mocking things. And it was right at game time and the stadium was mostly empty. And I think I said something like catch the fever exclamation point. And some clickbait site picked it up. And the headline was like Detroit Bowl has embarrassingly small crowd. And
it's a trip. You got aggregated.
I got aggregated and people were coming at me and a lot of people were like, oh, wow, this bowl sucks, blah, blah, blah. But the bowl, it did really fill in as the game went on. And by the end of the first quarter,
it was exciting.
Toledo probably brought 20,000 fans. And so I apologize to the Detroit Bowl, whatever it's called.
The game above sports.
Game above sports bowl.
That's right. Okay. So we are now going into the close of the show. Normally, we have a full slate of predictions to make, but only one.
And then there were four.
Ohio State and the Texas Longhorns, two of the biggest and proudest programs in college football meeting. They don't meet each other too much.
They do not, but they are going to be playing back-to-back games for one of them because Ohio State hosts Texas in the opener. That could be Arch Manning's first start. Or maybe Quinn Ewers comes back. Who knows? Another fascinating game that on paper, it's like this should be a major challenge, and you would think it would be a thriller. Texas has a good offense led by Quinn Ewers. They have a great offensive line, have been playing like it lately. But then defense, awesome. Maybe the best defense in the SEC. Another great defensive line that a few weeks ago we would have thought would have posed a huge challenge for Ohio State. But the way Ohio State is playing, it just doesn't seem like anybody can slow it down at this point. So I've picked close games in the first couple playoff games. I guess for the sake of keeping it consistent, I'll pick another close game, especially since we're going to be playing in enemy territory, so to speak, in Dallas, probably 70% Texas fans. I'll pick Ohio State 24 to 17.
24-17, a very football score. Very football score. Very common football score. Let
they
me give co- you...
They cover. It's a backdoor cover. Well, not a backdoor cover. Texas will make it kind of fake close in the end.
Do you know what the spread is right now?
I think it's six.
Six for Ohio State.
Ohio State will probably get up 24-7. Texas will come back a little bit, but it won't actually feel close.
That would be on par for how Ohio State has been playing. Let me give you the correct score. Okay. Let me give you
actually,
the correct
Ohio
score.
Ohio State will score more than that. It'll be 31.
He's
31,
got it. He's getting
20.
Closer.
31-20. Am I right yet? Am I getting
the correct score is 37-19. Ohio State over the Texas Longhorns.
But it won't feel that close.
Oh no.
No.
Thanks for listening to the Heart of the Rivalry. He's Dave Briggs. I'm Phil Kaplan. We're gonna see you next week to talk about Ohio State playing for the national championship.
Will we have a post-national title show?
Yeah. All right. No matter what.
Nice. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because we'll do a closeout
Right. Texas, Notre Dame. I don't know how Ohio State loses this game, but I don't want to say that. I thought the same thing against Michigan.
Peer into the crystal ball. How does Ohio State lose this game? They play like they did against Michigan. They just run like the dumbest game plan they can come up with.
But there's no way they'll run a dumb game plan.
No, I think so they've done that. They've seen what that happens.
I mean, the only way would be like if Will Howard, it'd be like a Penn State start. And then, I don't know. It's crazy that Ohio State was struggling with like Indiana and Penn State just a few weeks ago. And I know those are good teams, but it's like if Ohio State
and Nebraska. Let's not forget that Ohio
State
game
plays
was
yeah. I mean
it was nip and tuck.